This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the US Lens, our bi-weekly look at what's happening in the marketplace, where in some instances the stock market slowed down a bit, but in other instances we've seen some real moonshots among certain stocks and certain sectors. Joining me now to talk about small and mid-cap equities is Bob Kaner. He is the head of U.S. small and mid-cap equities at Schroders North America. Bob, thanks for being with us. Good to have you again.
Thanks for having me, Ron.
So we've seen this insane outperformance after 13 years of small underperforming large. We now have the widest gap, I believe, in history between small and large cap stock performance. So what do you make of this move, which obviously we've talked about in the past, we've looked at as an opportunity, but it's really exploded?
Yeah, I think you have a broadening of economic growth that is really changing the dynamic of the market. I mean, if you go back, you know, the last 13 years, as you mentioned, you know, we've basically lived in a world with really scarce growth, and market participants have kind of been forced into a shrinking number of secular growth assets. And given the recovery that's underway, I think that that has changed dramatically. I would argue that growth is no longer scarce. Growth is everywhere. And the irony is what's going to be scarce is valuation. And I think people look at the small cap space as being a little bit more emblematic of the real economy, if you will. It's not nearly as levered to just tech, media, telecom as the larger cap brethren. And I think it's a better representation of kind of true economic growth that we're seeing in the U.S.
So when you say what's going to be scarce is valuation, just to maybe put a finer point on that for the audience, what exactly do you mean by that?
Well, I think that as growth broadens, there are opportunities to participate in economic growth, as opposed to a very scarce growth environment where we had many fits and starts over the last 13 plus years, and the market's been forced into just a narrow group of secular growth assets, probably best represented by the FANGs, if you will. So now that growth is broadening out, you really have an opportunity to participate in that economic growth. And what's hard to find right now is reasonable valuations to get exposure to that growth. Given that the market is now discounting that cyclical recovery, you know, well past 2021. So I think that, you know, it's one of the reasons you've started to see value outperform growth. We talked about large versus small, but there's clearly been a significant shift in the dynamic between growth and value. In fact, this year, I think the value index has better earnings growth than the growth index, given the more pro-cyclical nature. So why pay higher multiples for slower growth?
All right, let's go back and to the overall economic outlook and fundamentals. I mean, how much, and one could argue that some aspects of the market right now are not paying attention to fundamentals at all, and some aspects in some sectors of the market are. How important are the fundamentals relative to liquidity or other drivers of market performance of late?
I think the fundamental backdrop is really the driver for the market at this point. I mean, we're seeing, there's certainly areas where there continues to be a significant amount of speculation. We can talk about the SPAC market, if you will, what's happening in electric vehicles, space exploration, et cetera. But, you know, there's a core part of I'll say, the real economy, you know, represented in the market, whether it's financials or industrials, that are seeing, you know, substantial earnings growth, real acceleration, and increasing demand. So I think that the fundamentals are the driver, but with this amount of liquidity that we have in the market, clearly you're going to see some speculation in parts of the market.
Yeah, with respect to speculation, as you said, you don't traffic there. Does it worry you though about where we are in the cycle itself?
Yes, I mean, clearly with the amount of liquidity that we have in the market, that you are concerned that there is a moral hazard developing where market participants may believe that the Fed is going to bail them out, if we hit any bumps in the road. You know, you've had the retail flow, if you will, as a percentage of volume has doubled in the market over the last 12 months. That is, you know, that's concerning, right? And we do believe that that creates an incremental risk. But you know, when you think about what's happening on the Robinhood platforms and some of the like, it's alarming, right? I mean, there's a lot of speculation occurring, and there's not a lot of fear of losing money, and that's a dangerous recipe.
All right. Now, with respect to the areas in which, as you said, you traffic smaller companies, we are now looking, at least reportedly, at the prospects for a change of fundamental tax policy in the United States. The Biden administration, looking to fund a large infrastructure package, is contemplating raising the corporate rate from 21 to somewhere between 25 and 28%, and possibly raising capital gains taxes on individuals making $1 million or more. How does that affect what you do?
So it will clearly impact the earnings expectations for the small cap stocks. If you go back to the Trump tax cuts back in the 2017 period, the small cap stocks disproportionately benefited in that environment. It was added about 8 percentage points to the earnings growth. I don't think the market really underwrites that. I think it looks at that more as a one-time benefit, or in this case, a one-time negative impact. But without a doubt, the small cap companies have a greater share of domestic revenues than large cap. So they, you know, are naturally higher taxpayers than their large cap brethren. And so an increase in tax rates will be an issue for the small cap stock. But I think it's some small cap stocks, but I think they'll look through it rather quickly. Regarding higher income tax rates on individuals earning over $1 million, I mean, I think we've been in an environment where we've had fiscal and monetary policy tailwinds. And to the extent that some of those fiscal policy tailwinds turn to headwinds through a higher tax regime, I think that could cause a little bit of risk premium to come back in the market, something I think would be, frankly, healthy at this point. And that's kind of how we're thinking about it as it relates to individual income tax rates when we're talking about small versus large. I think it's a bigger issue for the market.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
Yeah, but the flip side is that the tailwind that's coming, assuming we're all freed from prison at some juncture, is going to be a massive reopening of the U.S. economy. And while we've seen kind of extreme behavior in Miami and some other places, I mean, just getting people to go back to doing what was normal, whether it's outdoor dining, possibly movie theaters, sporting events, concerts and the like, seems, and people are making the argument that we're, you know, heading into the roaring 20s. We are going to get a period of explosive growth from which it seems small and mid-cap companies might benefit even more than the big growth companies that survived and thrived during the lockdown.
I agree with that. I think that the U.S. economy is far ahead of almost every developed nation in the world. And I think we are set up for that explosive growth. I think the market's pricing a good chunk of it in. But I do think that the economic growth that we're going to see, Ron, it's like nothing I don't think either of us have ever seen in our careers. You know, we're going to see a 9-10% GDP type numbers this year. And that is, you know, that is an explosive kind of backdrop. And I think it's very bullish for the overall economy. The question, of course, is what is being priced into the markets? And I think that as the economy reopens, hopefully sooner rather than later, perhaps, you know, June or July, the water's going to kind of have to find that level. And we're going to have to see where we are and how the economy is performing relative to the expectations of that explosive reopening.
And then with that explosive reopen, some people worry about the prospects for rising inflation, you know, broadly speaking, or even more narrowly when it comes to supply chain disruptions, input costs that may not get passed on to consumers. And then not only that, maybe higher wages, maybe higher interest rates. How do you factor that all into the operating thesis that you're working from?
Yeah, the supply chains are very tight right now. You are seeing input cost inflation across a wide array of industries, but companies are able to pass that through because supply chains are tight and demand is strong. So we always look at companies that operate in industries with what I would call, you know, a very solid industry structure where you have kind of a limited number of suppliers where you can pass that through. I am a little concerned that as we look forward, some of those companies and industries serving more of the consumer sectors, whether it's restaurants or housing, might have a little more difficult time passing on their input cost inflation because we haven't seen that labor recovery catch up to, I would say, the business recovery that we've seen. But generally speaking, companies are able to pass through, especially you think we've all heard kind of what's happening in the semiconductor industry. Yeah. You know, that's an industry that's getting positive pricing and they serve a customer base where it's very difficult to get positive pricing. But right now, supply chains are tight. It's going to take a while for them to level set. And I don't think we have the prospect of wage inflation just yet. But I think we've talked about this. Inflation has easy comps, if you will, for the next few months. And we're going to see inflation numbers that are going to look, you know, pretty, they're going to catch a lot of headlines initially. But at the end, you know, the Fed's still looking at this as kind of transitory. And until we get real wage inflation, I don't think we see a policy response from the Fed.
Yeah. And while this is not the 70s, and there are too many differences to even to mention here, some are talking about, you know, instead of describing it as inflation as transitory, it's almost like a piglet through a python, that there's going to be a bulge in inflation that eventually works its way through the system and then normalizes again. That seems to be the bet at the Fed.
Yeah, and I think there's no reason to challenge that. I agree with that. We still have a lot of kind of deflationary forces around technology and automation that are kind of a broader kind of cover to what's happening in the rest of the economy.
To the extent that is appropriate, I mean, what sectors do you think benefit from the tailwinds and the reopening that we're going to see? One would assume relatively soon in the U.S.
I think industrials and basic materials are probably the two most levered. I would also tell you that financials are clearly, in our world, it's regional banks. They are clearly levered to an improving economic backdrop. I mean, they are very cyclical by nature. They have the benefit of steepening yield curve, releasing some reserves because they all reserved very aggressively kind of in the throes of the crisis last year. And you're starting to see the Fed actually loosen up their ability to return capital through shareholders, whether it's through share repurchase or through M&A. And we haven't even begun to see loan growth improve yet. So I think that's one of the areas that will continue to see the tailwinds. The consumer area, I think, was probably propped up a little bit early through the extensive stimulus that we saw last year.
Yeah, well, 90 million Americans just got $1,400 and we're not even done yet. So,
yeah. Two of my children are recipients of that, which we can debate the logic around that at a later date.
Yeah, but that's given that we got $900 billion in January and now another $1.9 trillion spread over different areas, I mean, it is historic, the amount of money that's gone out the door.
Yeah, and I think the money, the way I would differentiate it, I think the money, you know, the checks showing up in mailboxes to consumers is really a quick shot of adrenaline as opposed to the increased CapEx that we're seeing across large parts of the economy to reshore capacity, kind of secure supply chains, increase in automation investment. That has a much longer tail in our mind, and that's why we're more focused kind of on the industrial and material side of the equation than we are on the consumer.
Quick final question. What, from your perspective, in the small and mid-cap world, what's the thing that stops this outperformance dead in its tracks?
Frankly, I think it's slowing economic growth. I think that once growth becomes narrow again, you get the market participants crowding into the secular growth stocks, which tend to be larger cap, you know, tech, telecom, media, if you will. And frankly, I think that's the big risk. I think that if you see lower rates in response to slowing growth, which I do not think is you know, on the horizon, I think that is really what forces the market back into those larger cap secular growth stocks. But for now, I think the setup is really favorable as it's been for the small cap area for a long time. I mean, let's not forget, we had 10 of the last 12 years where earnings growth in the Russell 2000 was faster than the S&P 500. And yet for 10 of those 12 years, the S&P outperformed the Russell. So while we have lots of outperformance in the last 6+ months, you go back over 10 years, the small cap market has been struggling relative to large cap, even with better fundamentals for a number of years.
All right, Bob, always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us today.
Ron, thanks for having me.
All right, Bob Kaner, head of U.S. Small and Bob, thank you. And Bob Kaner is head of U.S. Small and Mid-Cap Equities at Schroders North America. That does it for another U.S. Lens. Hope you have a great week or two, and we will talk to you again soon. I'm Ron Insana. Have a good day.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch with us about anything on the show or give us ideas for future shows, you can email us at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. If you want to listen to the Investor Downloads back catalogue, and why wouldn't you? You can go to schroders.com/the Investor Download or rate, review and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New shows are available every Thursday and every other Monday from 5 p.m. UK time. But above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.